So I'm hoping that you all have had a beautiful week. I've been actually reveling in some of the sharings and the questions, actually in all of the sharings and all the questions that have been coming so lavishly on the over the listserv. And I know that those of you who don't like to be in that conversation, the listserv, may also have been enjoying them, even if you haven't specifically joined in. And also know that you're very welcome to join in during the week ahead. It's, again, a beautiful, beautiful experience for me to be part of this conversation on in the Falling in Love with Meditation teleclass. And, of course, this is our third class. It's the last teleconference conversation we'll be having for this series, but we will continue to be practicing together for 7 more days. And it's my hope that our practice together in the subtle realms will go on for much longer than that. So really, this is our second week of practicing, and our third week is to come. So let me just tell you a little bit about what we're doing tonight. I want to take a little time to look at some of the brain science around meditation, partly because it's a fairly recent discovery for me, and therefore something that I find really interesting and like to share. But also, of course, because understanding the way meditation works neurologically is really important in understanding how meditation actually transforms us. I've found it really quite inspiring to look at the brain science, even though my experience with neurophysiology is that very often what neuroscientists are doing is measuring scientifically or physically responses that many of us kind of take for granted or experience as, you know, kind of common sense responses. And this is certainly true about the research that's been done on meditation. As meditators, we know that some of the research that people like Andrew Newberg and Herbert Benson and Richard Davidson have done, we know that it's true because it's been our experience. But of course, what brain science does is concretize, or let's say, bring scientific confirmation to what we have experienced ourselves, what we've intuited, and, you know, being the empiricists that we are in our society, in our modern and postmodern world, we like it when we get a physical confirmation. So what brain science actually does is describe from a physical perspective what we may experience from a psycho-spiritual perspective. And, you know, it's, in other words, what we experience subjectively, we discover, actually has a physical analog in the brain. I'm not going to get into the conversation about which comes first, the brain or the mind, the brain or the spirit, because I'm an adherent of the Kashmir Shaiva tantric Advaita view that there actually is not a separation, that the physical and the... Hi, guys. It's Sally. Yes, and thank you for your patience. Anyway, I'm back, and hopefully the rest of you are also here. We're talking about neuroscience. Maybe that's what made the phone lines go off. Something about when we start talking about the ways in which the brain and the physical universe correlate, maybe it creates a kind of ripple effect in consciousness that affects the phone lines. But one of the reasons that I really have enjoyed neuroscience and meditation as a topic is because there have really been times when understanding the benefits of meditation actually helps you keep going when meditation is feeling dry or not so interesting. And I've just found that anything that makes us recognize that meditation is important, that it actually makes a real difference in our lives when we make getting on the mat a priority. So it's I think that we'll enjoy thinking about this a little bit. I also want to say that the purpose of these classes, other than the fact that they're enjoyable, is to give you a jump start in the practice and actually support you in understanding what happens as you practice. So the Q&A and the conversation and your sharings and your insights that appear on the listserv are really important. One of the key reasons why having a satsang on meditation is such a good thing to do. And as I sometimes say, it's actually very rare for a group of people to get to have this particular conversation. You don't find so much discussion on meditation going on, even in our current world where there's so much conversation on so many topics happening over the phone lines and online. So why do these classes jumpstart you? I find that there are three basic reasons. One is your commitment. We really can never overestimate the power of our willingness to move deeper. Secondly, it happens through the transmission of meditation shakti, the lineage energy that moves through these teleclasses. As I've said, and Karen last week asked a question about this, every lineage and every teacher has a particular and unique transmission. There's one that flows through these teleclasses that's a kind of alchemical energy that comes from the lineage realm that I'm connected to, that actually several of you here are connected to. But as I think I told Karen, actually every one of us has unique and, for most of us, kind of mysterious, subtle energy sources that are what we sometimes call protective forces or guides that actually exist in our subtle field. And when we make an intention to evolve in some way, the qualities of these, of the guidance that we begin to receive, of the blessing that we begin to receive from subtle realms, gets seriously upgraded. So I can tell you this from my own experience and from students of mine, that once you made up your mind that you want to move deeper into the inner world, that you want to practice more deeply, that you want to evolve your consciousness, to use the language that's current, the helping forces of the universe really do start to show up for you. And it's very powerful, as you know, in these conferences. And of course, there's also the power of the Sangham, the collective consciousness, the we space that's created by all of us together being focused in this particular direction. And again, I want to assure you that the power of the teleconference continues. It continues, obviously, when we're not online, and it continues into the future. As you, for example, listen to the classes, you'll find that the energy vortex is kindled. And as you meditate with these practices, you will also find that the energy that has been injected into them by the lineage shakti and by the group shakti is present. So, one other thing before we chant, I call this class "Falling in Love with Meditation," but actually, I have found that it could be called "Falling in Love with Yourself," because, as many of you have been sharing, when you get to know these parts of yourself, these subtle parts of yourself that show up in meditation, as you move through the surface layers of yourself, you start to see that what you are, in essence, is so deeply worthy of being loved. And you start to fall in love with yourself. Even when you're facing your inner shadow tendencies, which I know comes up in meditation for all of us, and that is very much a part of the process. But even when you're facing your shadow tendencies, as your confidence in meditation deepens, you really do see the loveliness that is you. That's your real self. So the wisdom of the great mind, the love of the great heart, the love of the great self is fully incarnated inside your body, inside my body. And the more we're willing to explore it, the more we're willing to meditate with it, the more dynamically we can be present with it, the more we can be in relationship with it, the more powerful our experience of the inner self really is. So find yourself a posture that in which you can be comfortable and upright. Again, if you're in a chair, make sure that your back is supported by pillows that help you push you into an upright posture. And you can align yourself by reaching back and pulling back the skin on your buttocks to broaden the base of the posture. Roll in the skin, first on the right thigh and then the left, so that the skin of the thighs moves inward towards the groins. And you might want to put your hands on both sides, on each side of your ribcage, and lift up through the ribcage, just to have a sense of what it's like to be fully lifted. And have the sense that your shoulder blades are releasing down the back. And allow yourself to sway for a moment from one buttock to the other. Find the center point, the place where you're truly poised, where there's equal weight on both sides of your buttocks. The steady, comfortable posture. The steady, comfortable posture, which, as the Shiva Sutra says, allows us to become immersed in the heart, is one that arises when we align ourselves in this way, when we take the time to align ourselves. But also, see if you can relax into the posture. Actually, relax your efforting. We'll get more into this later. And see if, with the breath, you can inhale down into your body with the intention to allow things to be as they are. And with the exhalation, just see if you can have the sense of surrendering the feeling of anxious effort that is so much a part of our lives during the day, and which it's hard not to bring into meditation. So let yourself relax the sense of effort. And we'll be chanting the mantras invoking the presence of the infinite consciousness, which is also the deepest and most intimate awareness that is you. We'll be chanting, asking that the underlying truth that is Shiva, whose nature is to know, to feel contentment and joy, and to be fully present, that we invoke that consciousness, who is both the source of life and the source of meditation. And once we've chanted, we'll repeat the mantras that offer our practice. And, you know, as we go into the chant, just have the intention. We can say that perhaps this is our intention for the evening. May there be joy. May there be peacefulness. May there be sweetness. May there be tenderness. With the inhalation, may there be joy. With the exhalation, may there be peacefulness. Inhaling, may there be sweetness. Exhaling, may there be tenderness. And with that sense of the tenderness that's present in the atmosphere, being aware of the breath flowing in and out of the body, having the sense that the breath caresses your body as it flows in and out of the nostrils, as it expands the lungs. Sense the breath as the loving touch of the Shakti. the mother energy, the sacred power at the heart of life. And with the breath flowing easily and naturally, we'll chant. Through the power of our practice, we ask that all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. We ask that all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. We ask that all beings know the sacred joy that lies beyond suffering. We ask that all beings experience equanimity beyond grasping, hatred, and dullness. And may we experience the equality of all that lives. With your awareness flowing with the breath, relax into the different sensations in your body without privileging any one sensation. See if you can be aware of the sounds, of the subtle sensations of the air against your face, the fabric of your clothes touching your skin. Be aware of thoughts arising and subsiding, of the mood, of the energy that's part of your experience at this moment. Let your attention cycle where it will. Perhaps you'll have a thought. You'll go with the thought. Then you'll let go of the thought and come back to the breath. But you can let your attention just cycle between inner and outer, between the environment inside and the environment outside. And your intention in this moment is to experience the whole field of your awareness, the entire field, inner and outer, so that even as your attention is drawn by my voice, by a thought, by a sleepiness or a feeling of restlessness, Just see if you can keep coming back to your sense of the whole field. And in that sense of the wholeness of the experience field that's your present moment, see if you can just catch the tail of the bird of awareness itself. See if you can, just for a second, notice the awareness that's able to hold all this. And notice how when you're including the entire field, when you're open to the entire field, that elements that might be distracting become less so. So if a thought comes up and takes over, if you widen your awareness and include the thought as just one part of your experience, then you may notice that it's less sticky, it's less distracting, it's less of a big deal. And in the same way, when you include the ambient sounds or perhaps the voices from the street or any other sounds that are coming up, they're less of a big deal also. They're part of your meditation. And again, as you allow your attention to cycle, to go where it wants to go, but with this overall recognition that your whole experience is being held in awareness, see if you can also let go of every form of effort except this subtle effort to hold your experience in a single field. And as you move your body a little bit or open your eyes or not, just please feel free to stay as you are. And I think many of us know that this whole field meditation, attentiveness to the entire arena of the present moment of your experience, is actually a practice in itself. It's a great way to start your practice when you're sitting for meditation. And what you may have noticed is that there are actually several layers to it, and the more you do this, the more you just let yourself sit with your awareness open like this, the more you experience those layers and their significance. So at the most basic level, when you take in the whole field of your experience, and you can, you know, in a certain way, we do this in meditation partly so that we can train ourselves to do it on the bus, in the office, in a meeting. Obviously, it's a beautiful thing to do when you're walking in nature, while you're changing your toddler's diapers, even while you're driving. You just open your awareness, and as you do that, you root yourself in the present moment. Your tight attention, your efforting attention relaxes. And very often that is enough to give you a connection to presence, to oneness. And of course, at a slightly deeper level, the whole field awareness is actually a prelude to recognizing the faculty of awareness itself, this, you know, amazing subtle ability we have to know, to experience, which is really the natural, not just the backdrop, not just the context, but is actually the source of experience. In Kashmir Shaivism, in the language of the non-dual traditions of Hinduism and Buddhism, when we tune into awareness, we're actually tuning into the ever-present, ever-existing state, presence. A lot of people object to calling it a state because a state, of course, passes. And this presence is eternal. It doesn't stop being itself. And in the non-dual tradition of Shaivism and also in Vedanta, it's called the fourth state. Sanskrit name is Turiya. It's called the fourth state because it's the nameless, formless human experience that's not waking, not sleeping, not dream, but is actually present in all these. And because it has no content, this fourth state has no content, it also has no names. So this experience of pure awareness is the presence that comes forward, that literally moves into the foreground as we enter the enlightened self. In those moments when we are awake, when we're fully awake to ourselves. And what the sages, what the texts remind us is that this ever-present, this witnessing presence, awareness, love, because its quality is also love, this transcendent state, if you will, is also present and available in our waking state at any moment when we allow ourselves to turn our attention back on itself, when we catch the tail end of our own awareness. So as you begin to bring whole field meditation, W-H-O-L-E, not H-O-L-E, meditation into your ordinary practice, you might begin, as we have now, with a tiny taste of it, just like those moments when you catch the tail of your own awareness. And I suggest that you do it right now. You can let yourself be present to that in you, which is present to the fact that you're listening to me. You know, and sometimes it's said that this practice is like throwing a cloth over the tail of a bird. Awareness is so subtle, it's so elusive, that we catch it, we lose it, we catch it, we lose it, and gradually, little by little, it becomes more and more of our real, you know, of our constant experience. Just because we're turning our attention to it. So what we do is we keep tuning awareness to awareness is that we're actually, this is really important, we're training the brain to self-reflect, to use its power of attention to recognize its own deepest nature, its own deepest, most intimate nature, which is self-reflection. Reality is, by its nature, self-reflecting. And we, you know, this self-reflecting process helps us recognize that the true I, The true self is pure awareness, awareness without content, even though there's all this content that rises and subsides. Inside awareness, awareness itself has no content and no object. And that awareness is the deep reality behind the I am that we are practicing with, behind the words I am. The words I am lead to the wordless I am, which is pure awareness, aware of itself. And one of the ways we get to it is through whole field meditation. For many of you, it has in the past, and perhaps in this moment, becoming aware of the whole field of your experience, and then of the awareness within which experience is arising and subsiding, can also let you begin to recognize that whatever is happening in your experience, even when it seems to be happening outside you, that is, outside your body, it is actually taking place inside awareness. You know, I often do a little practice which I know a lot of you have done with me, where you ask yourself, am I inside this room, or is this room inside me, meaning inside my awareness? Or you could say, is my awareness inside this room? Or is this room inside my awareness? And as you recognize, even just intellectually, that whatever is occurring inside your awareness, is this really interesting effect, right? Which is, it actually challenges our deep-seated, let's call it a belief, although it's definitely an experience, that the world is outside us. Just holding the understanding that what you see with your physical eyes and experience with your other senses is actually being held inside awareness. That is, without that awareness, you wouldn't be having an experience. And awareness is always the backdrop, the container, and eventually we realize the source of experience. So let's return to the whole field awareness of our body sensations. Awareness of temperature, awareness of the air in our clothes touching our skin, aware of what's going on in our belly, in our muscles, aware of the parts of our body that are moving with the breath or that are experiencing sensation with the breath, aware of our thoughts, aware of the awareness that holds it all. And with that, you can let your attention now come to the breath as we ease into our concentrative practice, feeling that the inhalation flows in and down towards the belly with the thought, I am. And the exhalation flows up and allows the heart to expand. The I am thought flowing in with the inhalation, and the exhalation flowing up through the center of the body and just gently expanding the heart. Just let your attention flow with the breath, with the I am thought, welcoming the breath softly letting your attention focus, letting the power of the breath exert its power to draw your awareness in towards the belly, allowing the thought, I am, to be not only a thought, but a feeling of being. A deeply relaxing sense of the presence of your own existence. Your awareness flowing with the breath, flowing in towards the center of the belly with the deepening feeling of I am. Flowing with the exhalation through the heart, so you feel this natural expanding sensation in the heart. And you can open your eyes if you like, stretch your body a bit. If there's something you want to write down, take a moment to do that. And see if you can be aware of the whole field of your experience. Including, even if it's just for a fraction of a second, that subtle capacity for being aware. that lets you have this experience. One of my teachers said something about meditation that I've contemplated for years, and it keeps revealing different facets of itself. So I'm going to say it a couple of times. Some of you know this statement, and some of you won't have heard it before. But it's really a deep commentary on what really occurs when we meditate. She said, meditation doesn't solve problems. Meditation changes the state in which problems exist. Meditation doesn't solve problems. Meditation changes the state in which problems exist. Actually, whole field awareness does the same thing. It broadens the basis of your experience. But meditation, especially if we do it for a while, really does shift the state and shift us out of problem consciousness. And of course, there are a few ways to take this statement, and one of them is just very simple. You know, when you go to sleep, your waking state problems don't exist. So, and it's also true in meditation. If you're really in meditation, the stuff you've been worrying about during your day stops being a problem because you're out of the waking state. But one of the differences between sleep and meditation is that when you take a problem or a question or an issue into meditation, or simply when you practice meditating on a regular basis, the experience of things not being a problem actually becomes a genuine waking experience, and it comes into your waking state. So it's not just that you go to sleep and forget about your problems, as happens every night. And what normally happens when you wake up is that all the problems that you went to bed with are right there. They're often the first thing we think of when we wake up. Meditation is different. If you notice what it feels like when you have a problem and you meditate, you actually come out of meditation and something has dissolved. So, but another thing that I've found about meditation is that it actually brings forth our capacity to shift out of the state in which life feels problematical. You know, there is this experience where everything in our life feels full of duality and problems. And meditation can shift us out of that. And it can also, and this has been one of my great experiences of meditation, that as you begin to approach your life with a tendency to spend some time every day meditating, you actually do begin to have a palpable experience, and I know a lot of you have been sharing this with me, that there is wisdom and resourcefulness that's available, that's accessible to you, which actually resolves problematic issues and can resolve things in quite unexpected ways. So this is part of what this statement means. Meditation changes the state in which problems exist because it actually shifts your consciousness. You know, one of the big mysteries in life is how at a certain point in history the Berlin Wall came down, and at a certain point in history apartheid ended in South Africa. And, you know, things change, things shift. Impossible realities actually become a little more possible, and vice versa, of course. But the shift to the positive shifts in consciousness, of course, happened because a lot of people made a lot of effort. But what also happened was that consciousness shifted. I heard something on NPR today. These two NFL professional football players had made public statements in support of gay marriage. As far as I can tell, they weren't gay themselves, although they didn't say they weren't. But in any case, the reporter was saying, well, isn't this kind of a new thing in the NFL that professional football players can support something that is, you know, relatively radical in certain quarters of our society? And they said, well, you know, in the 90s, maybe, you know, people felt differently, but now we really realize that equality means equality in who you get to choose to love. And, you know, that's a shift in consciousness. It's a big shift in consciousness. You know, whatever your feelings about it, it's a huge radical kind of opening of awareness. So this is comparable to what happens to us in meditation. In other words, we learn how to hold issues and problems inside a meditative container, inside awareness, and, you know, then we begin to experience the benefits of our connection to the great mind. And when we can hold issues and problems within the cradle of awareness of the great mind, they change, they shift. So, and this happens so profoundly that some traditional meditation teachers used to tell their students, and my guru did this as well. Swami Muktananda used to do this, and I understand that Maharishi Mahesh Yogi used to say this also. My guru used to say, meditation alone will cure your psychological problems. Of course, he never used the word psychological, but he basically believed that meditation was the cure for anything that, you know, is contracting in your consciousness. So I've come to realize that this is not entirely true. And my guru didn't even, you know, if you queried him about it, you know, he would say, because he was a profoundly sensible being, that you have to resolve problems on the level of the problem. So if you don't have a job, meditating is not going to get you a job if you don't do something in the physical world about it. Although, of course, miracles do happen. But nonetheless, my guru and many, many traditional teachers and contemporary brain research have pointed out that meditation actually changes the brain in very specific ways that have a powerful effect on our thinking patterns, our behavior, and, of course, because the inner and the outer are very merged, it also affects our exterior life. And what brain research is saying is that as the physical climate of the brain changes, certain skill sets emerge, not because we've tried to learn them, but because our internal meditation practice has cultivated them through the brain. So, for example, thousands of studies that have been done on meditation practices that people who meditate for 30 or 40 minutes a day, in other words, we're not talking about casual meditators or occasional meditators. We're talking about people who really practice. Is that there are permanent changes, and the most interesting ones to me are the ones that affect the way we look at ourselves and our lives. So, for example, one thing that they've been discovering is that different types of meditation and different approaches to meditation actually affect different parts of the brain. And I would say that this is a really good argument for working with several different meditation modalities. I want to say this again. I like it because it confirms something that I've felt intuitively, which is that no one meditation practice is going to create the kind of transformation that skillfully working with several different types of meditation practice is going to affect. So, for example, concentrative practice, you know, practice that actually asks you to focus, has a different effect than practice that we just did of being aware of your whole field and holding it inside awareness. Visual meditations with mantra, devotional practice, each affect a different aspect of the brain, which means that each of these practices has its own positive effect on brain states. So that's one reason why in falling in love with meditation, we actually want to play an experiment and learn to recognize the effect that different types of practice have on our experience in meditation and out of meditation. And what happens, I've found, is that when you do a kind of integrated practice in this way, that that there's a kind of simultaneous transformation in the brain in which all these different parts of the brain come to work together. So, for example, if you'll bear with me, and before I say this, perhaps you'd like to bring your awareness to the breath. Let the breath flow in down towards the belly with the thought, I am. Flow out, expanding the heart. And see if you can listen to me with this inner attention. With this inner attention to the felt sense of the caressing breath flowing easily down in towards your belly. With the feeling of I am, which is really the feeling of being centered within yourself. And then let the exhalation come out through the heart. So here's a fact of brain research. The parietal lobe, which is one of the aspects of the cortical brain, gives us a sense of self in relationship to time, space, and the objects around us. So when this part of the brain is active, we have the very important waking state experience of relating to a world that seems to be outside us. In other words, we relate to ourselves as unique, separate individuals, defined by the body boundaries and our personal history. And if we happen to be religious, we relate to God as outside us. When activity in the parietal lobe decreases, we feel timeless, spaceless. Literally, we don't feel like we necessarily occupy a particular space, peaceful, and one with whatever we're contemplating. So if you read Jill Bolte Taylor's famous book, My Stroke of Insight, which her stroke actually cut off the parietal lobe in her brain, her experience was that she entered a state of oneness, timelessness, spaceless, utter spaciousness, complete peacefulness. So even if we're not in that, completely non-dual state, the type of meditation that we just did, the whole field meditation, will tend to decrease activity in the parietal lobe while we're practicing it. And so will all the other inner body practices that we've been doing, the inner breath, the experience of breathing in and down to the belly and up to the heart, which opens up our inner body, also tends to change our relationship to time and space. So, and what Andrew Newberg, who's a researcher at the University of Pennsylvania, who wrote a book called How God Changes the Brain, he writes that advanced meditators who meditate and have a decreased level of parietal lobe activity while they're meditating, when they come out of meditation, they have a higher level of parietal lobe activity. So in other words, advanced meditators who are able to decrease the activity in their parietal lobe in indrawn meditation, experience timelessness, spaciousness, oneness, etc., when they're in the waking state, it actually increases their capacity to hold boundaries, to feel the uniqueness of their self. It gives them, in other words, a stronger sense of self as an individual in relationship to the world. So, in other words, the feeling of being a healthy, functional self increases as a result of experiencing spaciousness and oneness in meditation, as a result of decreasing parietal lobe activity in meditation. So, and this is something I know that those of you who've been meditating for a while can recognize. You know, there's this. Now, I would say that in the early stages of meditation, there can be times when that feeling of expansion takes a while to embody. So often when we're first going deep in meditation, we may come out of meditation and really have to ground ourselves, as Helene was asking during that on the listserv this week. But over time, the sense of strong boundaries actually increases. So here's another interesting piece of brain research, which I've found particularly interesting because it matches my experience. So, and I probably yours as well. So it said that when you do a contemplative practice that invokes love or joy or hope, you know, whether it's loving kindness meditation or a devotional practice like we're going to be doing later tonight, these you know, loving practices, welcoming is another one of those of these practices. You know, just softening to yourself, accepting yourself. These increase activity in a part of the brain called the anterior cingulate cortex, which is a little organ in the midbrain between the frontal lobe and the limbic system. This is the part of the brain that actually communicates between the rational brain and the emotional brain. And when activity, this is not going to be a big surprise to you, when the activity in the anterior cingulate cortex is increased, we experience more empathy, more capacity for compassionate interest in others. And this is one of the reasons why the welcoming practice is so powerful for so many of you, because as we do it in meditation, it actually trains us to do it in daily life. And it's happening because the rational brain, which is what is you know, the part of us that's able to give ourselves commands and exercise willpower and make rational decisions, when the rational brain communicates with the limbic brain, which is the emotional part of us, it actually creates the capacity for transformation. So apparently we can't change in, you know, we can't make positive changes in ourselves, in our lives, in our minds, without the communication between the rational brain and the limbic brain. The limbic brain is what gives juice, charge, soulfulness to our experience. So these meditations that amplify the connection are really significant. And one more piece that is quite interesting is that there's this mysterious part of the brain called the thalamus, which is a walnut-shaped structure that sits on top of the brain. And the thalamus regulates how you identify what's real and what's not real. And it actually is also the part of us which gives emotional meaning. Emotion, it creates priorities. It gives importance to the thoughts that occur in the frontal cortex. And I want you to pay attention to this because it actually makes a big difference in the way you understand how to work with thoughts. So obviously some of the thoughts that move through our brain are random. We don't particularly assign meaning to them. They're sort of mental static that goes on. It's when we assign meaning to a thought, it's that when we attach to a thought, that thought has charge, whether it's a positive charge or a negative charge. The thalamus has two halves. One half's in the right brain, the other half is in the left brain. Most people have equal activity in both halves of their brain. Advanced meditators, however, that is to say, people who've meditated for more than 10 years, develop asymmetrically on these two sides of the thalamus. They have much more right brain development. And brain scientists who've done these studies surmise that this is the result of prolonged focus on interior realities, on the experience of love, in peace and divine presence, focus on God. Newberg claims that it's this which allows people to have experiences of divine presence that they know are real. So it's what makes our interior experience understandable as no less real than what happens in the external world. In other words, from the physical point of view, what's sometimes called the eye of the spirit has a location, has a physical analog, let's say, in the thalamus gland. So the thalamus makes no distinction between inner and outer reality. So if you experience, if you contemplate love and oneness long enough, the brain will begin to recognize them as real, and you'll experience corresponding positive brain states that affect your entire system. This is also true, of course, of negative brain states, of negative thoughts, which is one reason why the process of thought shifting, of creating charged positive thought forms in your mind is so incredibly useful to every part of your being. It's one of the reasons why cognitive therapy has been so helpful in treating depression, because when we begin to change negative thoughts to positive thoughts through whatever means we do, it actually shifts our sense of what's real. This is a big deal, and it's this activity in the thalamus that Newberg believes is why people who have spiritual experiences are often so profoundly changed by them. You know, and it's why when you have a strong spiritual experience, one that you really sense as real, that it will in some way transform your sense of self and very often your exterior life. I've found that, you know, it's been incredibly important to me, and I do my best to help other people get this. It's been incredibly important to me to study non-dual philosophy, systems of thinking that point us towards subtle reality, especially philosophy that helps us understand that this universe is made of divine energy. Because when we do, it trains the thalamus to assimilate the understanding that there really is such a thing as non-duality. And eventually, it makes it easier for us to recognize the truth of oneness in daily experience. So, even holding the thought, as I'm going to ask you to do right now, that one single divine energy exists in everything, just holding that thought, or as Meister Eckhart put it, I just read this today and I love it so much I want to pass it on to you. Meister Eckhart says, God enjoys himself through us. God enjoys himself through us. He then goes on to say, God doesn't enjoy himself through us as a creature separate from him, from God. God enjoys himself through us as God. So, just holding that thought for a moment, universal consciousness, divine reality, the great presence that is the source of everything is enjoying itself, herself, himself, through me. Notice how it shifts your experience. It's shifting the activity in your thalamus. So, I would just say that falling in love with meditation and experiencing the deepest transformations through meditation is much easier, and meditation is much more effective when our practice is consciously combined with intentions that trigger loving, positive, non-dual states in us. So intention and prayer make a difference. Focusing softly makes a difference. Welcoming makes a difference. The more we can deliberately introduce loving intentions into our practice, the easier it is for our inner sense of what the world is to shift into a more loving expression, experience. And this is true, again, I can say this to you because it's my experience, that even when you're in the stages of your journey where, you know, the buried anger or sadness or sense of unworthiness that all of us have, all of us hold from, you know, from all the different not positive experiences we've had, nonetheless, even when you're experiencing not so positive emotions arising, you can still shift your experience of them by welcoming them, by actually having the recognition, I welcome this apparently negative feeling. I accept it. It's okay with me not to feel 100% wonderful right now. So just just introducing the understanding of welcoming, of accepting, even those arisings that don't feel so pleasant, is going to shift you out of the belief that reality is not your friend, the belief that reality is difficult and not loving. It's going to start to give you the experience that reality is, in fact, by its nature, loving and accepting. And you don't have to believe this, because if you will introduce an attitude of welcoming or acceptance or tenderness or softness, you have to find the words that actually trigger that experience in you. You will find that there is an interior shift, as so many of you have been noticing. So every time we touch our softness, every time we experience a sense of the breath caressing our inner body or expanding the heart, every single one of these meditations shifts our waking experience by subtly and minutely and cumulatively changing our brain patterning. So you can assimilate this by letting the breath flow in with a feeling of welcoming, in and down to the core of the pelvis of the thought, I am. Letting the exhalation flow up and blossom the heart. Expand the heart. Soften the heart, yes, open the heart. Letting the breath flow as the life force, welcoming it into your body. Welcoming the breath as it flows into the heart. And in these next few moments, we're going to engage the heart center directly with its particular capacity for opening us. And we're going to be doing a practice that's part of all the devotional traditions. I have done devotional practice for years for the sake of the way it feels. And in this one, we are going to invoke our inner presence, our inner being, as a beloved presence. You know, you can do devotional practice with a sacred other. And you can also do devotional practice with yourself, with your inner being, with your inner beloved. So we'll start by just recognizing that this very beautiful fact that your inner self, who is you, can also be experienced and related to as a friend, as a sacred other living within you and with whom you can be in relationship. And I've found, and I know many of you have too, that there are times in your practice and times in your life when we need to invoke our inner being, our inner self, as an other, as an inner beloved, because that's what lets us open to giving and receiving love. So relating to the divine, relating to essence, relating to the deep self as a beloved, as a friend, can open us to the kind of love that we may not fully experience when we're meditating on awareness. Because even though awareness and love are not different, even though awareness and love are two sides of the same experience in consciousness, nonetheless, there is an enormous gift that we give ourselves by invoking what's sometimes called the being in the heart, the presence in the heart. In the yoga tradition, it's said that within the heart there is a lotus, a flower, and within the lotus there's a being of light. So in the yoga tradition, in the mystical Christian tradition, in the Sufi tradition, in the mystical Jewish tradition, this recognition that there is a being of light who lives in the heart and who's identical with the source of the universe is just a profoundly transformative practice. So it's also true that it's not necessary to think of the inner beloved as being just inside your heart. Sometimes you can kind of approach your inner being through the heart. And I've found that this is very powerful and important simply because the heart center is the place where love is most available and apparent. We can approach it through the heart with a sense of allowing the heart to open and soften, but also having the sensation that this inner presence that we're calling on is not only inside, but also outside, is an inner presence and a subtle other. So we're going to invoke the presence in the heart, the lover in the heart, the friend in the heart, in a very simple way, and we'll do it as a kind of a call. So, and I want to offer you two ways to call the self in the heart. One is to call the self as beloved, with the word beloved. Another word that we can use to call the self is friend. And another way we can call the self is, in Martin Buber's language, as thou. You know, for hundreds and hundreds of years, people have called on that inner presence as thou. But you don't have to use the old language, you can say you. So I'm going to give the instructions alternating beloved and friend. And as you use these words to yourself, you may find that one of them feels right, or you may find that you want to call thou. But what we are actually doing is calling on our inner being as a sacred other. And we're doing it like this because it's one of the ways that we call forth loving presence in relationship in the inner world. So you can begin by placing a hand over the center of your chest, your dominant hand, which for many of us is the right, but maybe the left, with your palm against the center of the chest. You could also, if you're wearing a headset or you have the call on speaker, you can place both hands over the center of your chest, the right palm touching the chest, the left palm over the right. And begin to feel the breath now flowing with your awareness into the heart center beneath your hands, and then expanding with the exhalation so that the heart begins to soften and open even more than it has in our previous meditations. Sense the breath as a caress, as a gentle touch in the heart. And as you do this, don't have any particular expectations of how you're supposed to feel. Really, what's happening is that the breath is bringing its gentle fingers, its gentle caress into the heart. And as the breath flows in and touches this energy in the heart, in the very center of your body, some of you may find that you can even imagine yourself inside the heart, sinking your attention into the heart as if the heart were an inner room or even a cave. You know, it's a cave with golden walls, a cave that's deep and velvety. Or you can just let yourself feel the breath, bringing your attention more and more deeply into the center behind the chest, behind your hands. And to amplify this feeling, you might want to bring into your mind a person for whom you felt love or from whom you felt love. This feeling of very deep personal affection, whether it's a present relationship or one in the past. It might be a grandmother or a lover or a child or a beloved teacher or a moment in nature when you felt love arising. And let yourself sense your way into the love, feeling of love that you remember with this person or this situation. And then see if you can let go of the object of the other person and just let yourself feel the presence of love in the heart. And if other feelings arise, just offer them back into this presence in the heart. Feel the breath flowing in and out through the heart, tenderly, buoyantly. And with your awareness flowing in and out of the heart, call to yourself, call to that inner presence as beloved, or as friend, or as thou. Find the word that evokes a tender sense of presence in the heart. Beloved, thou, you, however you feel in this moment, let the breath keep caressing your inner heart and let the word that you choose arise as a calling. Beloved, friend, thou, you. Find the words to call the beloved in the heart, the friend in the heart, the one who lives inside you, who is the very form of love. there's something you'd like to say to the beloved or ask the beloved, say it. Think it to that inner presence. And with your hand over your heart, just keep calling, keep speaking, beloved, friend, thou, or whatever words feel true to you, whatever word or words feel true to you. And for some of you at this moment, it may be more true, more real to actually feel that the beloved, the one in the heart, is saying those words to you, beloved, friend, thou, or even I am. Let the beloved in the heart, the presence in the heart, the inner divine self in the heart, speak, address you, speak to you. Whatever word comes up, let that be the calling. And if thoughts arise, just keep offering them back into the beloved of the heart, letting the subtle caress of the breath keep bringing your attention deeper. The breath keeps caressing the inner heart, expanding your sense of presence, softening the heart. And perhaps you feel that as this presence expands in you, you may also feel it through your body or even surrounding you. Just let the breath keep bringing your attention into the feeling of presence in the heart and as the heart. Sensing the warmth in the breath, drawing you towards awareness of that one who is the inner friend, the inner beloved, the inner knower, the one who knows you, who loves you. And as you allow the breath to fill your heart and open your heart, take just a moment to offer your meditation to the beloved, to the friend, asking that the practice we've done be of benefit to all beings. And now as we close our meditation, take a moment to imagine that this presence in your heart sends out a thick white light, an energy that emerges from your heart, that rises from your heart and begins to wrap itself around your body. It flows up over your head and down your back, wraps itself around you from head to toe, covering your whole body, side up and down the sides, wrapping itself around you like a cocoon of light, of energy. And you may imagine it visually, or you may just have the sense, have the intention that this energy in the heart wraps itself around you like a protective cocoon, so that you're allowing the openings that have occurred in your meditation to be protected as you go about your evening. And in these moments, as our conversation comes to an end, just welcome your body. Welcome your thoughts. Welcome everything that's arisen in meditation. Take some time to journal, to write down what occurred. And know that you'll be receiving your homework. And remember that we're being held in this current of meditation. We'll continue to be held in it through the week to come and the weeks after that as we practice together and as we practice alone. Know that in this meditation current, we're genuinely held by sages, held by each other, held by our intentions, held by the love that's the very heart of meditation. And please, if you have questions or anything you want to share, please send them to the listserv and we'll continue our conversation. Know that you're always welcome and more than welcome as this sangam, this vortex of meditation, reforms over the months. Every month, we regather the sangam, some of you who are here and some of you who aren't here this month, but will be here next month. And each three-week period, we'll explore a different facet of practice. Next month, it's shadow. It's called turning poison into nectar, what happens when we practice with our shadow qualities is that they become the energy that takes us higher and deeper. And the following month, in the month of December, we'll be doing 3 weeks of practice with the inner Kundalini energy, the knowledge of it, the practice of it, and the amazing flowing electrical currents that Kundalini arouses in us. And each of these practices, each of these gatherings, helps us wake up a little more to who we are. We're all in this process of waking up, and we're in it together. So it's an enormous honor and privilege to be with you in this journey. And as we close tonight, I offer you my love, and I receive the love that you've all given to this class and to each other and to me, and that we're offering to really to the world as we practice together. Have a beautiful evening and a beautiful week. Stay in touch. Namaste.